All right, we're going to spend 2 weeks on microscopy, so I'm going to talk today longer than next week, but we're going to be using the scopes for 2 weeks. And microscopy is not an easy thing to do. It might seem easy to just put your eyes up to a microscope, but there's a lot more to it than that, and it's very probable that every one of you sucks at microscopy at this point. And it's pretty probable that you'll still suck when you leave, but it takes practice is the point. And that's why this first week is kind of practice, just getting used to the scope. Next week you won't have this preparation, so you can get right into more stuff. But I want to talk about the scope that you just got, which I have an example of here, and how to use it. First of all, this is an example of a light microscope as opposed to an electron microscope, for instance. A light microscope uses humanly visible light that is passed through some specimen, the thing you're trying to look at, before it hits your eyes. More specific than that, because there's different kinds of light microscope, it is a slide scope. Because it's designed to look at specimens that are put onto glass slides. In the rightmost cabinet are dissecting scopes, which are also light microscopes, but they're not nearly as highly magnifying, and you don't use them for such tiny things. You can look at your fingertips, for example, which is pretty cool. Or actually, where your skin hits your nail is pretty cool to look at very close. But anyway, this is the slide scope, which you'll use more than the dissecting scope. Even more specific than saying it's a slide scope, this is an example of a compound microscope. Not all microscopes are compound, but nowadays most are. What is it that makes a microscope a compound microscope? Well, it's not enough. It's kind of ambiguous to say that there are multiple lenses. For instance, it's not a compound scope because there are two lenses you put your eyes up to. That makes it a stereoscopic microscope. Some microscopes have just one lens you just use one eye for. So that's not quite enough information. What makes a compound scope, if it is compound, a compound scope is that light passes, after passing through the specimen, light passes through one lens, which magnifies the image to a certain amount. And then that already magnified image, the light from that passes through a second lens that magnifies it again before it finally reaches your eye. So it's a magnified and then remagnified image in a compound scope because light travels through the two lenses sequentially, one first and then the other. And so that brings up two categories of lenses that any compound scope will have. The simplest compound scope is one that has just one of each of the two types. But what are the two types of lenses?
The oculars and the objective lenses.
Right. Ocular lenses, some number of them. In this case, it's two. They're called ocular lenses because ocular means of the eye. So they're the lenses you put your eyes up to. And objective lenses, some number of them. In this case, there are three on this model. The objective lenses are called that because they're the ones that are closest to the object, the specimen that you're trying to magnify an image of. All right, so the simplest possible compound scope would have just one objective and one ocular. This has a choice, though, of objective lenses, and having a choice means that you can choose from different magnifications. Each of the two categories of lenses has its own magnification, which we express in some power, some number X, number of times that it makes it look bigger to us. And the magnifications are listed on the barrels of the objective lenses. You can see, for instance, the blue striped one is 40X, the red striped one is 4X. That means that for that 4X objective, the red one, that makes the image look bigger, looks four times bigger than it actually is to us, just for that lens. But we don't see it yet, right? Because this is a compound scope. So it's magnified four times, and then it passes through ocular lenses. In this version of the scope, the ocular lenses have a 10x magnification of their own. So the total magnification, what it actually looks like to your eyes, is the mathematical product of the two individual magnifications. Therefore, it would be 4x times 10x is 40x overall if you use that combination of lenses. Okay, now, the version, the model of scope you have, as we said, has a choice of objective lenses, and they are placed on this device that swivels. What is that device called that holds the objective lenses? Right, it's the nose piece. And so that black ring with its knurled outer texture allows you to swivel that to change objectives. Now, this model of scope is an example of what we call a parfocal scope. Most modern ones are parfocal. What that means is that when you switch to a different objective lens in order to get a closer look at higher magnification, a parfocal scope is designed so that changing that lens shouldn't really change the focus. If you've already focused it for the lower power objective, it should at least be in rough focus when you go to a higher power objective. More about focusing in a minute, but that's what parfocal means. There is a light source in the base of the microscope, which won't work, of course, unless you have it plugged in. But there's a switch on the right side that controls the lamp. Just putting that switch on, you won't necessarily see light, though, because there's also a rheostat, a dimmer knob, on the other side. So turn on your light, and if you don't see it, or whether you see light or not, mess with the dimmer on the other side to see how that affects the light intensity. Now, this is a common mistake that beginning microscopists commit. They tend to think, well, if we're seeing this thing with light, then the more light, the better. But that's not true. Too much light is bad. There are two major ways that you can change the amount of light that passes through your image and therefore how bright it looks to you. One of those is by using the dimmer. And if that's all you want to do is change how bright it is, then the dimmer is the best choice because that's the only thing it affects. All right? The other way you can adjust the amount of light, though, is by changing this ring that I'm working with right now. Notice the ring below the platform. That device is an iris. Just like the iris of the eye can close down or open up, that's what swiveling that does. The hole is called the aperture. And the opaque part that the light doesn't pass through is called the diaphragm, but you can call the whole thing either aperture, iris, or diaphragm. They all really refer to that way of adjusting the amount of light. Now, that obviously is going to affect the amount of light because it's either closed down a smaller hole or opened up, but that also affects other things. That's why I said if the only thing you want to change is brightness, use the dimmer. When you close down, you're using only part of the lens because the rest of the lens is blocked. And if you use just the middle part of the lens, it has fewer distortions. Any lens has a distortion. You know, like a typical peephole in a door has pretty high distortion. It kind of looks like a fisheye lens when you look through. It's all distorted because you're using the entire lens. If you stop down, you're using just the middle part of the lens, and it has less distortion in one way. But you stop it down too much, you start getting another kind of distortion, which is called diffraction. So it's a trade-off. But the point is, using the iris doesn't change just the light. It also changes the quality of the image. And so you should play with that, because you can stop it down to a certain point to make it better, but that's going to make it darker, and you can compensate that by moving the dimmer a little brighter. Okay, just remember that both of those controls are there. Play around with it to get the best image. That's the part that makes microscopy difficult. Okay, a minute ago I mentioned the platform, but that's not the real name of this platform. I just said that because you would know what I mean. What's the proper name for this platform? The stage. The stage is the part of the microscope on which a slide containing your sample rests. But, and so there's a hole in the stage for light to pass through from the lamp below it. Notice, though, that on top of the stage there is a clamping device that can be opened up to allow for a slide to go in there. There's only one proper way for a slide to fit in there. And you should not worry if putting your slide in the only way it can go into the clamp results in your slide not being centered on the hole. That's because this whole apparatus, the clamp and the thing that moves it, which is controlled by these two knobs hanging down to the right of the stage, all of that is called the mechanical stage. And so you always put your slide in the only way it can fit in properly, and then you move it to where you want it by using the knobs of the mechanical stage. There's two knobs for the mechanical stage, kind of like, that works exactly like an Etch-a-Sketch. One of the knobs moves the slide away from you or towards you, and the other one moves it right and left. So that's how you center the slide on the light, not just by plopping it down on the center. Always put it into the clamp the only way it loads. Okay, now, we talked about objectives a little bit. This one happens to have 4x as the lowest power, but it would depend on the model. In any microscope that has a choice of objectives, so more than one objective lens, whatever the lens is, the objective lens that has the lowest power is called the scanning lens. And a couple things important about that. First of all, it's called a scanning lens because of something that you need to know about objective lenses. This is a slide, and if you center your slide and look at it, whenever you look through the scope, what you see is a circle. That circle is called the field of view. And the field of view always looks the same size to your eyes, no matter what magnification you're using. But it's actually not the same size in reality. Because when you use higher magnification, the field of view is actually a smaller portion of the overall area of the slide. It looks as big to you, but everything in it is going to look bigger as well. Okay? So when you change objective lenses, as you go to higher magnification, the diameter of the field of view decreases, even though it looks the same to your eyes. All right. Another thing about objective lenses, though, is something that has to do with depth of focus. So this is a side view. If this is the barrel of an objective lens, and you have a slide with a cover slip on it with some specimen in there, the depth of focus for any given lens is the range of distances from the lens, like in this bracket, for instance. Anywhere in that range would look to your eyes, because of the way our eyes work, it would look in focus. Now, there is really only one distance from any given specific lens at which things will be perfectly focused. But our eyes can't tell the difference unless the error gets too big. And therefore, anywhere on either side of that perfect focus, it will still look in focus to us, but only up to a certain range. And that range is called the depth of focus. Well, I just told you that the field of view gets smaller when we go up in magnification. The depth of focus also gets smaller. And in fact, it can be so small, a depth of focus, that it's not even as thick as one cell. And that's why you can, at high magnification, you can see, you can look at a cell and not all of it will be in focus. You can kind of use the focus knob to go through sections of it, see parts of it come into focus and other parts will be blurry because that depth of focus is so thin. You're going to get an idea of this with one of the prepared slides I'm going to talk about once I get through the rest of how to use this. It's the one with the three strings, but I'll describe that in a minute. Okay. Let me start that over. The reason that every single person has its own scope today is because it's really important for each person to personalize that scope for his own body. Okay? And there's two major ways that you personalize this scope for your own body. One has to do with what is called on any given human the interpupillary distance, which is simply the distance between your two pupils of your two eyes. That's not a constant among humans. Each human is a little bit different. Some people's eyes are farther apart, some are closer together. And that's why these two ocular lenses, if you grab them, can be moved farther apart or put closer together. And this is a common mistake to overlook this adjustment. Even without a slide on there, if you have the light turned on, you can know whether this is set properly because if you look through it and you see two circles, look with both of your eyes open, assuming both of your eyes work, if you see two circles of light, then it's not the right interpupillary distance. So try to set that distance so that it looks like one circle of light, one field of view with your eyes. Okay, that's one way that you personalize it. You can do that before you even start using it. Now, though, let me actually tell you how to properly use this, which means this is how you actually should do things once I stop talking today. The stage, notice, is controlled by a duplicate pair of knobs. There's a pair on the right side of the neck and a pair on the left side. They both do the same thing. But these huge knobs, especially the bigger knob, notice, changes the vertical position of the stage. So go ahead and move the huge knob, which is called the coarse focus, and see its effect on the stage. Don't look through the scope. Just look at the stage moving up and down when you move this coarse focus. Also notice that when you move the coarse focus, the smaller knob moves as well, but even faster. The smaller knob is the fine focus. But they're called focus knobs because that's how you focus the image, by getting the slide, the specimen, at the correct distance from that particular lens for it to look in focus. You do that by raising or lowering the stage. Okay? But when you first use this, and every time you change a slide, you first need to start by using the coarse focus knob to bring the stage all the way down until it stops. Now, there's two reasons for doing this, but they're not of equal importance. One is simply that it gives you more room to work with to load the slide, which you, of course, do by putting it in the clamp properly, like I said before, and then using the mechanical stage to roughly center it over the light. That's the relatively unimportant reason, The other important reason, though, I mean, the more important reason for always starting with it down, is that if we didn't do that, if we just had the stage at some, wherever someone left it, the last time that was used, then chances are very slim that plopping a slide on there will look perfectly in focus, because it's not going to be at the right distance, right? But there's two ways it cannot be at the right distance. It can be because the stage is too low or too high, and you won't know which is true. So if it's already too high and you try to bring it up, you're just going to make it worse, and it's never going to come into focus for your eyes. If you start with it all the way down, though, yes, you know it's not going to be in focus to begin with, but you know it's because it's too low. And therefore, if you just gradually, while looking through it, bring up the stage by using the coarse focus, and sometimes it takes longer than you would think, eventually, if something's there on the slide, it will pop into focus. Okay? So, that's why you always have the stage down all the way whenever you change slides, including putting the first one on. Another thing, though, for each slide is that you start with the scanning lens in place, never a higher objective lens. There's two reasons for that also. One is that it gives you, well, actually more than two reasons. One is that it gives you more working distance because the scanning lens is the shortest one. Another, though, is that the scanning lens by far is the easiest one to focus. So you should always start each slide with the scanning lens. All right? Oh, I forgot to tell you why it's called the scanning lens. It's called the scanning lens because it gives you the widest view. The field of view is the biggest, so it gives you a comparatively wide view of what's on the slide. And therefore, you can, by focusing it, look at what's there that you might want to get a closer look at. If you do see something interesting, then you can use the mechanical stage knobs to move the slide around and put that interesting thing in the center. Then you can go up to a higher magnification, which will still be in the center, but it'll look bigger now. In other words, you can scan the slide to see what's interesting using the scanning lens. But the reason that it is so much easier to focus is because of what I told you about this depth of focus. The scanning lens has the greatest depth of focus, so anywhere in there will be fine. As it gets tiny, it's much harder to focus, and that's at higher magnification. Okay, so obeying all that, you have your lamp on an intermediate intensity. You've already adjusted your intrapupillary distance. You have the stage all the way down by using the coarse focus knob. You properly load your slide. You get it roughly centered over the light hole, even before you look, put your eyes up to it. Then you close your left eye, open just your right eye, and look just through the right ocular. It's going to be out of focus, so you're not going to see anything even when you do put a slide on there. But keeping just that one eye open, you use the coarse focus knob, bring it up gradually until something pops into focus, and you get it as good a focus as it can get with that coarse focus knob. Then you use the fine focus knob to get it even better if you can. Once it's as good as it can be for that right eye, then leave the focus knobs alone. Because if you change them, you're going to change it for that eye. And so this brings up the second way in which you have to personalize this for your body. You then, after it's already focused for your right eye, close your right eye, open just your left eye, and look through just the left ocular. If it's in perfect focus, which it probably won't be, you're all set. But if it's not in focus, don't touch the focus knobs, because that'll make your right one wrong. Instead, use the separate focus on just the... See how it's a slider? There is a kind of a slider ring here on the left one that allows... Notice how it moves the ocular in and out. That's a separate focus just for the ocular. So if it's not in focus already, you use that separate focus on the ocular lens to make it perfect for your left eye. And this way you make up for any difference you have between your two eyes, which aren't equally able to focus in a lot of humans. All right? Then once that's set, you can open both eyes, and assuming you've already set your intrapupillary distance correct, you should see one circle, and it should be in as good a focus as you can get at that scanning lens at the lowest power. Then, like I said, you move, use the mechanical stage to move it around and find something interesting. Always put it in the middle, because if you go up in magnification and the interesting thing is on the edge, the new circle, which is going to be smaller, might not include it. But if you put it in the center, it will include it. And you can go up to the highest objective lens to get the best magnification, but you'll soon appreciate how much more difficult it is to focus. Speaking of focusing, the scanning lens is the only lens that you should ever use the coarse focus knob for. Once you have the coarse focus knob set, since it's a parfocal scope, when you go up to higher magnifications, it should still be pretty much in focus. And therefore, the only adjusting you should do is with the fine focus. And that's because at high magnifications, the slide is very close to the lens. And if you use the coarse focus, you can shove it right up into the lens and ruin the lens. Or it's not as big a deal if you ruin the slide, but you don't want to ruin the lenses. Okay, so coarse focus only for scanning lens. If you go through all of those steps, then you'll have the best focus you can have for both of your eyes. You'll have the best view because of the intrapupillary distance. And then you can start playing with light intensity and opening and closing the iris to get as good a view as you can. All right, so that's what you're getting used to today. And the only slides that you have to look at today, because the same setup will be here next week, are the so-called prepared slides, which are over in these aluminum trays. And I want you to realize that each tray has a red piece of tape on it saying what these kind of slides are. Don't mix them up. Each slide is labeled, but put the slide back in the correctly labeled tray so that they're all the same for the next batch of people in here. But you have three prepared. The prepared slides are called prepared slides because they've been made for you. They're permanent. The cover slip is glued onto the slide. You don't have to prepare the slide. One is a dog flea, which is interesting to look at in very close-up detail. One of them is a letter E. It's simply a typed letter E that is there for a good reason. The reason you're looking at the E is because it demonstrates that everything that you see under a slide microscope is the image is reversed right to left and upside down. So when the E is big enough on the slide that you can just look at it with your naked eye and see which way it looks right as an E. And then when you put that down, you'll notice that when you look through the scope, it's not right anymore. It's backwards and upside down. And when you use the mechanical stage to move it around, when it looks like it's moving right to your eyes through the scope, you'll see that the slide is actually moving to the left because everything is reversed. So that's why you're looking at that one. And then the third one is the colored threads one that I was mentioning earlier. There's three different colors of thread. I think it's red, blue, and yellow maybe, but whatever. Three colors. The threads are at different levels, though. So one of them is low, one of them is high, one of them is in between. And this demonstrates what I was talking about as far as depth of focus is concerned. The depth of focus for the scanning lens, which is what you should always start with, is so deep that all three of those threads will be within that range. And therefore, you should be able to focus it and see all three colors focused, all three threads focused at the same time. But when you go to higher magnification, you'll only be able to see one of them focused and the other two will be out of focus. And by playing with the fine focus, you can bring one into focus and blur the others. So that's what that demonstrates. Now, technically, you don't have to today make a wet mount, but I want to describe what it is. And if you really want to, you can do a wet mount today, but you're going to do one next week anyway. A wet mount is not a prepared slide. You prepare the slide, and starting with a blank glass slide as we have up here, which are pretty robust unless you abuse them, but you really do have to be careful with the cover slips in two ways. One is that they will slice the hell out of you if you just try to grab them. So be careful with the cover slips for that reason. But what people aren't as careful about is paying attention to where they are. Don't let cover slips be on the floor or on the counter space, because other people, like the people that clean up, can accidentally, for instance, pick them up with a paper towel, not knowing they're there, and put them right through the palm of their hand. They are really sharp, so pay attention to where they are. Whenever you do make a wet mount today or next week, the whole pair, the slide and the cover slip, don't take them apart again. Once you're done with the slide, throw the whole thing into the glass disposal, but only the slides, no napkins or gloves in the glass disposal, which is over here. Okay? But a wet mount obviously is something that involves moisture, wetness. In this case, it could be pond water, for instance. Whatever your sample is, say this is the glass slide. There's a best way to do a wet mount. You put your drop of whatever onto the slide, into the middle, and you want to avoid just plopping haphazardly the cover slip onto that drop. Because if you just throw it on without paying attention, you're going to produce a lot of bubbles. And most of you, if you get bubbles, are going to think those are cells because they're round. Well, they're not. They're nothing to look at. And they're just distracting. So the best way of doing that is after you have your droplet on your slide, take the cover slip and put it on its edge to one side of the droplet, and then just let it fall onto the drop, and that will force the air out of the side that falls, and you get very few, if any, bubbles. Okay? So, like I said, you don't actually have to do that today. Feel free if you want to, but definitely look at all the prepared slides and get used to the scopes. And you can also see, I saw a cover slip on the floor just now. I'll have to get that. You should also, especially if you're not doing a wet mount today, there aren't as many scopes probably as there are people, although it's getting sparse in here. But these are the dissecting scopes. And you can, those are a new version as well. So play around with those. Like I said, look at your fingers or look at coins or whatever. Those can be pretty cool. That's it.